Hour 3. Triple option with RBKD. Shout out to Johnny Cash. Even Johnny's birthday. When did Johnny leave us? You guys have any idea on that one? We'll have to look that up.
I'm not sure.
You're not
sure? It was
sure?
In the 2000s. I remember that much. I remember seeing the magazine covers.
So we are. John is listening to our man BK and saying, you know what? We need to play some Johnny Cash. That's how good Johnny Cash was. Been a little bit of a country music Friday here. We're going to finish off with good Johnny stuff, taking you all the way up until 6:15, 6:30 pregame or 6:30 first pitch for Texas and BYU. You can hear that right here on the horn. I'm Kevin Dunn alongside Rob Babers, alongside Brad Kellner, and we have John Reichel, who is producing. Still lots of stuff to get to, including some Texas football. We told y'all to start the show off about a 2023 running back commit that Texas got. We will get to that for sure, because if you look at the film, good stuff. And we'll kind of get into what we saw with him, at least on the field, and maybe what he could be if he comes here, but other stuff coming in as well. And BK, you sent this, that the reports are that Texas has hired a new director of recruiting operations and they're going to Vanderbilt for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve Sarkisian continues to fill out his support staff at the University of Texas. Taylor Searles is her name. Apologies to her and her family if I mispronounced that, but she is coming over to be part of Sark's staff. She's going to be the director of recruiting operations. So she's worked at Vanderbilt. She spent some time at Auburn as well. And her dad, Stacy Searles.
That's what
y'all remember that name?
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
Yep. Her father, Stacy Searles, was the offensive line coach at Texas a few years back. I think he is currently coaching the offensive line for Mack Brown at North Carolina. So he's still very much active in college football. And apparently the apple not falling too far from the tree. His daughter, a very fast riser, it appears, in the support staff role in college football. So seems like a pretty good hire for Sark, and bringing over someone else from the SEC, guys.
Yeah, Rod, I mean, you got it. You know, the fact that he made the replacement that quickly, we've talked about it, that if things go well, you're going to lose people. And he did lose Brandon Harris. And so all of a sudden, you got to make that hire. He's got his ear to the ground and brings in Taylor Searles from Vanderbilt. So that'll be interesting to see how all that works out. But congrats to her. Yeah. And hopefully she can come in and kick some ass here.
Yeah. Sark seems to, you know, I would say he seemed prepared for the moment.
You
know, when you have all this restructuring going on, you know, people taking jobs and some people deciding not to take jobs. We've actually seen a lot of movement with the, you know, with the assembly of this staff and building this staff and the front office and the administrative part. And yet Sark always seems to have an answer. So it's a good sign that he's got a list that it looks like he can always refer to of people that he's always envisioned working with when he got to the job that he always wanted, like Texas.
Coaches have to be like ADs. They got to have a list of five at all times. Yeah. And even if things are going incredibly well and you don't think you're going to have to use that list, you better have it and be ready. Before we do get to that running back, I know I'm delaying the tease here, but lots some Texas stuff to get into, which is cool. Inside Texas reported today they had a really nice kind of team notes and report. And one of them was that Texas is expected to add Ben Davis, who was the 10th nationally ranked player in the 2016 class. He's from Alabama, stayed in state to play with Alabama, 6'4", 240-pounder, and just was not a great fit at inside linebacker for Alabama. So he did not get a lot of run with Alabama. We know that they are loaded, but BK, this is the second SEC guy, assuming they get him to go with Ray Thornton from LSU, bringing in some of that SEC defensive talent to try and help out Pete Kwiatkowski in his first year.
Yeah, it's nice to see a five-star not work out at another school. We're so used to seeing that here at Texas, where four and five stars
will fit in,
not live up to their potential. Now, we know at Alabama, more often than not, the blue chips turn out to have great college careers and turn into high-round draft picks at the NFL level. But Ben Davis didn't work out. And look, at Alabama, Rod, it's easy to get lost in the sauce, if you will. Because they bring in four and five star players at every position every single year. So if you aren't showing rapid progression relatively early in your career, then you can get lost in the mix, and playing time is tough to find when there's that much talent around you. So There is talent at linebacker for Texas. They brought in Ray Thornton and Ovie Ogofu, who can play linebacker positions. Ogofu maybe more of an edge guy, but they've got those two. They've got Overshone, and they've got Juwan Mitchell coming back from last year's team. But they need some depth there, right? Mitchell and Overshone did some really, really good things. You could tell Sark and Kwiatkowski have made that a point of emphasis, and you got the chance to bring in a guy that at least has some talent. I mean, at some point, he was regarded as one of the best players in the country coming out of high school. You bring in a guy like that, maybe you could find a role for him in some capacity next year.
Hold up. So Bama's got 2 5-star linebackers that transferred this offseason?
Yep. No, I mean, it's an embarrassment of riches, Rod.
Because that K-hole kid, right, transferred to Utah, right?
K-hole? Well, you didn't have to call him that.
Is it K-hole or K-hole?
No, yeah.
Is it K-hole?
I think it's K-hole.
K-A-H-O.
K-hole.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just saying, I wasn't trying to mess his name up or anything for a punchline. No, but he transferred to Utah, I think, recently, right? Or he entered the transfer portal and went to Utah, and now they got another one. That's just it's unbelievable.
It's an embarrassment of riches. But all three guys, including Ovie, who from Notre Dame, who BK mentioned, they're all, I don't want to say tweeners, we talk about that, but maybe could be in that jack spot. You've got Davis, who's 6'4", 240. Thornton wasn't Thornton around there, guys? I'll have to look up his size.
Ray Thornton?
Right, yeah. And then
He's a spectacular guy that could do it, and possibly.
And then Ovie was around 240, at least at Notre Dame. So do you add weight to those guys, and do you try and find a spot? My guess is Ben Davis and IT. Inside Texas is a great job, so go pay for that and go check them out, and they'll get into more of it. But they were kind of, you know, thinking that he could be an outside linebacker or maybe that jack position where he did not fit in at inside linebacker at Bama. But all three of those guys around the same size, do you add some weight or do you just try and find a spot for him, Rod?
Yeah, it depends on what Kwiatkowski, what kind of defense he wants. You know, I think he probably could build a defense around either. And even when Sark was talking about the defense earlier this year, he remarked that to the naked eye, he says it's going to look like it did last year. I don't necessarily believe that, but he claims that to the naked eye, it'll look like it did last year. So those responsibilities and the way they're going to divide up the different front responsibilities and gap integrity, we're not really sure about that, but I know they want those hybrid defensive ends. I mean, that's pretty much a staple of Kwiatkowski to have, you know, those hybrid defensive ends on the outside. And it looks like that, you know, that 2-4, 2-4, 2-5 setup that he had there at Washington. So I don't know ideally if they have the perfect player, their ideal body type and prototype at that position just yet. You essentially want 2 Joseph Osai's, and I don't really know if they have that.
I'll sign up for that.
Well, you don't get my point.
I know
the body
you mean size wise.
You want those 2 defenses both to be Joseph Osai's that can stand up, also put their hand in the dirt, 2-point or, you know, a 1-point, 3-point stance or a 2-point stance. So I don't know if they have that right now on campus. You're right. They may have to build it by adding weight, you know, subtracting some weight, building some strength with some of the other candidates they have there now.
But BK Sark mentioned this position at trying to fill some stuff, and so far they've done that.
Absolutely. And I like bringing in guys from winning programs. I mean, not that Ben Davis or Ray Thornton were huge parts of those Alabama and LSU teams that won national championships, but those guys have been around programs that have won national championships. Ben Davis, a part of a couple of title teams at Bama. Ray Thornton, a part of the 2019 title team at LSU. So some guys who know what it takes to win championships. And not realistic for Texas to win a national championship in 2021 while those guys are there, but to win a conference championship for the first time since 2009, KD, I think it's important, and it's good that you have guys who have championship experience in your roster that maybe can teach some of the other guys what it's going to take to get that done.
No doubt, and probably learn some lessons having to be around all those 4- and 5-star guys on a national championship team about what it takes to really get on the field, and hopefully they've learned those lessons. But yeah, if you're going to take 4- and 5-stars that maybe didn't work out at a spot, that's a good spot to start. And then, hell, really with all three of them, getting back to Ovie too, I mean, I know they didn't win a national championship, but all three of those guys have played in the playoffs, and that's where Texas wants to get to. That is the type of culture that you're trying to create with Sark and this whole staff and program. So I was glad to see that, and trying to get as many bodies there as possible. Hopefully it'd be really nice if two, but at least one of those guys could work out. It's going to be a little while for this guy to work out, assuming he comes here. But, man, he is – I love his – he's got greasy wheels, and he's got great lateral movement. He's a hard cutter, and it looks like he can fly, too. We're talking about Reuben Owens II. He is in the class of 2023. He's from El Campo, 5'11", 187-pounder, and he committed. Some of the other schools that were on the list, Arkansas, Auburn, OU, there were some pretty pretty good schools. Rod, he is a four-star if you're looking at 24/7 here. And we've looked at a little bit of film. I know it's 2023, but, man, Stan Drayton and Sark, it does not look like it's going to be a problem getting running backs to the 40.
Yeah, Stan Drayton's done a great job. He's even going back to Keonta Ingram, number one running back in the state. Darian Brown was the top running back in the state of Georgia. Bijan, top running back in the country. Jonathan Brooks, Mr. Texas football. Jaden Blue, number one running back in the nation, and now Reuben Owens, who's trending toward being the number two running back in the nation. So Stan Drayton has done a hell of a job. Give it up for Sark for keeping him there. As BK mentioned, the NFL has been really, really excited about Stan Drayton for a while. Even the Rams tried to pluck him most recently, and he still wants to stay at Texas and through two different coaches. So give it up for Sark for keeping him. And Andre Coleman's actually done a good job on the recruiting trail as well. I like that move. I know there is some concern. You stack that running back room the way it's looking for the foreseeable future. I saw Jonathan Brooks tweet out, best running back room in the nation, prove me wrong. It probably is getting close to being one of the better running back rooms in the country. I think the way you keep all those guys in one room and make sure you don't have a ton of turnover with guys deciding they want to hit the transfer portal because they're not getting enough carries or not getting enough reps. I would implore, and I was actually yelling and screaming for the last two or three years for Tom Herman to do it, use a few more 20 and 21 personnel packages with two backs on the backfield at the same time. I'm talking about tailbacks. I know Sark has done it. I've been watching some Sark film from the Falcons after he followed my boy Shano. He left and went to the 49ers. And Shanahan used more 21 personnel, two backs, one tight end, than any team in the league. He still does, but he uses more traditional fullbacks. I saw Sark actually use 21 personnel packages and actually 20 personnel packages. Two backs, split back shotgun with two tailbacks in the backfield. Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman at the time were those tailbacks. And if he can do that with the Falcons, I think he can do that here at Texas. You can still run a lot of the same things that you were running. I don't know why Tom Herman didn't want to use more of that running back talent to put it on the field at the same time. We know Sark believes running backs are undervalued in the passing game. If you teach those guys how to block, they can also be lead blockers for you. Not saying they're going to become fullbacks, but they can become lead blockers. Blockers for you and also give you extra numbers in the running game. They also can get to the second level to block. We saw Mike Yurcich do it when he was at Oklahoma State against Texas with Justice Hill and Chuba Hubbard and King. You can do it, and there are teams that are doing it. Texas just hasn't really explored that. But with all that talent in the backfield, you want to keep those guys on campus and out of the transfer portal, put them on the field at the same time. I'm not saying take away Bijan's carries. Bijan Robinson needs all of his carries and touches, but put those guys on the field at the same time. It gives you more variety, more creativity on ways that you can utilize and weapon those guys in the run game.
Yeah, BK, almost looked like he was taller than 5'11", the way he's running, but I do like he's very shifty, he's got good balance, he's got some quick feet, man.
Are you saying he's one of those guys who tells women that he's 6'1", even though he's actually 5'11"? He's one of those dudes?
No.
Is that what you're getting at?
I think that he says he's 5'11", he just feels 6'1".
There you go. I like that. Rod, I'm glad you brought up the point about the Jonathan Brooks tweet, because I saw Jaden Blue also tweet something out yesterday in support of the announcement that Reuben Owens was going to commit to the University of Texas. Like, I love that guys are excited about dudes at their own position committing to the same school that they're committed to. You know, sometimes, especially in the quarterback room, but sometimes you see, you know, guys a little bit upset when they've got competition coming their way. Even though these guys know that they're going to have to compete with Jaden Blue and with Reuben Owens moving forward, the fact that they're tweeting out positive remarks and excitement about more talented players coming into their same position group, I think is a pretty good thing. And it just shows the excitement level surrounding this program right now. But yeah, I'm in on Reuben Owens. I mean, the guy's nickname is the Black Unicorn. I feel like if you've got a nickname as badass as that, KD, you're bound to be a pretty good player. So I'm excited to watch this kid develop over the next couple of years. He still has two more years in high school.
Yeah.
Right? He's a part of the class of 2023. So he can't sign this December. The earliest he'll be able to sign is next December, 22 months from now. But hopefully he continues to get better and hopefully he stays true to his word and ultimately ends up on the 40 acres. But it seems like he is on a pretty fast rise to be one of the best players in the country for the class of 2023.
To add to your point, though, BK, and I guess I'll probably give Malik Murphy a lot of credit. This is obviously not the 2023 class. This young man's a part of 2023, Reuben Owens II. But the 2022 class, you do have Malik Murphy, who recently signed. And he, I think it was a Football Brainiac, so I'll give them credit. He is openly talking about guys he is going to flip and guys he is going to bring to Texas to commit to Texas for the 2022 class. I mean, openly throwing out names. And so I think one of them says T-Mac was a wide receiver who was like 6'4", some kid out of Bosco, Ernest Green. He's like, yeah, I'm going to get those two guys, and I got another third one I'm going to get two, but I'm not going to tell y'all about it just yet. And, I mean, I've always said this. The best recruiters are not the coaches. They're players.
Yeah.
Because there are no NCAA rules that prohibit players from talking to other players. If you got a guy out there who is really, you know, he's just a really personable guy. He's a great communicator. He's kind of a social butterfly. He's on social media, and he's really, really popular. I refer to it kind of as the We Are the World theory, right? The quick story on We Are the World, the great music, kind of, it was a music video, actually, that they made. But a song they made, all the great stars, Michael Jackson, Willie Nelson, Tina Turner, all of them. When they were first trying to make the song, they asked Quincy Jones, all right, about how they were going to get this star-studded cast. How do we get all these egos together? How do we get all of these stars to try to come together for one common cause? And Quincy Jones told Kenny Rogers and Lionel Richie, because they were the two guys who were spearheading it, he said, y'all just got to get Michael Jackson and Stevie Wonder, and the rest of them will do it. If you get those two guys, and then you go to the rest of them and say, you go to Bob Dylan and say, hey, Bob Dylan, I got Michael Jackson. You want to do it? Bob Dylan will do it. You go to Willie Nelson and say, Willie Nelson, I got Stevie Wonder and Michael Jackson. You want to do it? He'll do it. And that's why I figure recruiting works a lot like that, the We Are the World theory. For my class, 1999, it was Corey Redding. Once Corey Redding was the top player in the state of Texas, the best defensive player in the country at the time. Once he committed to Texas and Mack Brown, it was the We Are the World factor, the momentum. It was unstoppable. It was all downhill from there. And I think this kid, Malik Murphy's got some of that quality where he is the best recruiter. He's going out there, and there seems to be this momentum gathering around all these young men on social media, all talking about how Texas is the new spot to be. It is the it university, which reminds me of when Mack Brown first got here, and Texas wasn't cool in the late 90s. Wasn't that cool until Ricky Williams became the rebel with a cause, and then Texas became the it university again with that 99 class, getting Chris Sims and Corey Redding. I don't know. I do feel some of that with what Sark's doing right now.
You know what is cool? Having perfect vision. And Sharp Vision Modern LASIK can do that for you. So stop putting off LASIK. Don't wait another year. Now's a great time to do it, because Sharp Vision is offering LASIK starting at $495 per eye. You get guaranteed financing approval, which is really cool. And you're in, you're out. You take that free consultation, see if you qualify. Essentially, it's a free eye exam. And if you qualify, go do it. It was quick, easy, and painless. I was in, I was out, and I had perfect vision. 512-596-2020, 512-596-2020, or sharpvision.com, sharp with an E-vision.com. Sharp Vision Modern LASIK, official LASIK provider of Austin FC. What are we writing about today, Rod?
Matter of fact, I want to talk about this movement happening in the NFL, this quarterback empowerment movement. It's a player empowerment movement, but mainly with the quarterback. We're starting with Russell Wilson being disgruntled with the Seattle Seahawks because he wants to have more say in personnel and more say in the play calling. Deshaun Watson's asserting his authority with the Texans, saying he doesn't want to play for them, forcing and demanding a trade. We're starting to see more and more quarterbacks want that NBA treatment of those NBA superstars. And someone remarked to me that this is the first time they've seen anything like that. It actually is not the first time we've seen quarterbacks in the NFL act a damn fool and try to execute a quarterback coup d'etat. We'll talk about the first time this has happened and what we could learn from the last time the quarterbacks tried to make a power play in the NFL. All of that and more on the other side in Rod's Rant of the Day right here on the Triple Option with RBKD right here on 104.9, 101.9, and AM 1260.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God, okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
You've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. Time for Raj Rant of the Day. And I want to actually have a little history lesson here, a little brief history lesson. We won't go too far down the rabbit hole. We'll just go back a few decades, maybe 30, 40 years here. And I want to talk about the quarterback empowerment movement that we're starting to see in the NFL. I truly believe the NFL quarterbacks, they essentially now want to be treated like the NBA superstars are treated. That's the NBA exception. Yeah, they want that, right? I can demand a trade. Before you go draft somebody, I want you to talk to me. I'd like some consideration on who you're going to hire as a coach. We know in the NBA, the players pick the coaches. If the players don't want a coach, usually it's hard for that coach to stick around, hard for that coach to get a gig. It just is. Because keeping the superstars happy is the top priority of the entire franchise. And it should be, because it's really hard to get those superstars. In the same way, in the same vein, it's really hard to find a true franchise quarterback and the really, really good ones like Russell Wilson. He might want to say on who his offensive coordinator is going to be. He might want to say on what types of plays they're calling. He might want to say on personnel moves, which is all things that essentially Russell Wilson has discussed with the media, saying he would like a little bit more authority within the organization. And we all know Deshaun Watson's drama at this point. Deshaun Watson doesn't want to play for the Texans anymore, even though he just signed a long-term contract extension. He wants out. He's demanding a trade. He's got a no-trade clause, getting closer and closer to sounding like we're talking about an NBA superstar here. So I was talking to a friend of mine in the league. He said, man, I've never seen anything like it. I think it's going to spread to other quarterbacks, just them wanting to have more say and more authority. Even with the Kansas City Chiefs, it happened to, you know, Patrick Mahomes is not complaining at all. He's being treated like the prince that was promised, as well he should be. But they asked Patrick Mahomes who he wanted them to draft with their first round draft pick. They asked him, and he said, I wanted Clyde Edwards-Helaire. That's who they drafted. All right, in the Super Bowl, he came to the sideline on 3rd and 15 and said, Coach, I think we should run this play. And that's the play they ran. So he's getting some say in what they're doing, and they just signed him to a monster deal as well. So the times, they are changing as it relates to how you treat your quarterback. But this all started, this movement, in my opinion, started in the 80s, right? So we go all the way back. And there are two names you got to remember here, Frank Viuno and Mike Ornstein. They were NFL executives in the 80s and the 90s, right? So these Frank Viuno and Ornstein, they're NFL executives. They're working in the licensing department, right? Trying to figure out how they can rise up the corporate ladder. And they noticed something in the 80s. They noticed that the jersey sales, which was the largest revenue generator for the NFL licensing office, that it was mostly just one position that was selling all the damn jerseys. It was quarterback. It was like, yeah, every now and then you'd get some kids that want to buy, you know, jersey sales.
Jerry Rice
and Barry Sanders, yeah, right? You know, maybe a Lawrence Taylor. But for the most part, it was just quarterbacks. It was one position, and it was quarterbacks. And so Frank Viuno had a, you know, the bright idea that, man, you know what? The future financial strategy of the NFL should be tied to quarterbacks. Right, he believed whoever controlled the quarterbacks would control football licensing business, which he thought was big business, and he was right. It was going to be big business. And, you know, Tex Schramm years ago was advocating to change the NFL rules to turn the NFL into a passing league because Tex Schramm, who was a visionary in his own right, believed the NFL eventually would become a quarterback league. I think at right now it is a quarterback league. So fast forward, the NFL's Players Association, it decertified as a union for collective bargaining purposes. All right. They, in 1989, they registered as a trade organization to represent the NFL players in litigation and marketing rights. Now, keep this in mind. The Players Association signed the deal with the NFL office in terms of licensing, and they would get $1 per jersey sales on behalf of the players. Right. They'd get $1 from that jersey sales strictly to the Players Association. And that would go to fund the Players Association. And most of that fund was used to litigate the NFL, right? So most of the jerseys, so they get a dollar from every jersey that was sold. And the NFL Players Association was in a knockdown, drag-out affair in labor disputes with the current NFL, antitrust lawsuits and things of that nature. So Viuno decided, okay, you know what? We got two things that are right now that are dragging the NFL down. These antitrust lawsuits brought on by the Players Association And we also want to make more money off of the licensing deals from the players. And the bright idea for Frank Viono and NFL execs, they love this guy for this idea because it was a great idea. He believed that every athlete essentially is a greedy egomaniac. He wanted to tap into that and channel that. And he proposed to the quarterbacks, the quarterback club. And he said, listen, all right, you guys are selling all the damn jerseys. You're in this group licensing deals with all these other NFL positions and players, but nobody cares about them. All the people care about is you. All they do, they love you. They don't love the D lineman. They don't love the linebacker. They don't love the – they love you. So why don't you sign a separate deal with me, and I'll give you what you are actually worth, and – then we can avoid you paying your licensing fees to the NFL Players Association. Therefore, kind of bankrupting the NFL Players Association, siphoning what would honestly be their main source of revenue, because the quarterbacks' jerseys are the ones that are selling the most, and they're getting a dollar per jersey. But if you can take that out of the equation, man, the Players Association will be suffering. That was one of their main sources of revenue, and they used that revenue, of course, to sue the NFL. So the brilliant idea was convince the quarterbacks that they would be better off if they stopped signing their group licensing rights deal with the Players Association, instead enter a partnership with the NFL to individually market the league's most popular players, which are the quarterbacks. And they did. Took the NBA recipe. People forget this, and KD will remember it. In the 90s, when MJ is, you know, starting to ascend, and then you have Magic and Bird, the NBA is catching up with the NFL. Mm-hmm. The NFL actually might have been neck and neck with the NBA at the time. And these guys, Frank Viono and Mike Ornstein, decided, let's take the NBA's recipe. They're doing something right. They're selling the names on the back of the jersey more than the names on the front of the jersey. Now, it's tough for the NFL because the NFL guys have helmets on, and the NFL owners, the crotchety billionaires, had always thought to themselves, we want to market the shield and the franchises, because if we start marketing the players, they're going to want baseball player money with baseball player rights, and they're also going to want this Hollywood star type deals and money. That's why they never really wanted to market the players. And this new philosophy by Frank Viono was, no, we got to go after the players, because if we go after the players, we can sink the Players Association, because we can divide them. Mm. We can take their leaders away. The quarterbacks are the leaders in the locker room. They're also the leaders usually in these labor negotiations. The quarterbacks are usually the faces of those movements. Let's take away that face, therefore taking away the money. And then we will sink the Players Association. That was the whole point of it, and it was a brilliant strategy. And they took the NBA recipe. Individual sponsorships and endorsements are good for the league because they will inevitably promote the league and promote the teams. By the way, the owners hated the idea. Hated the idea. They were like, no, I don't want those damn quarterbacks to get big time. Then they're going to ask me for more money, and now I have to pay them big money and pay them big contracts and guaranteed contracts. So they hated it. You know who loved it? Paul Tagliabue. Paul Tagliabue was a lawyer by trade. He was actually a partner in a law firm. I think it was Covington and Burling at the time. He was also outside counsel for the NFL for the last few years, and he had been fighting all those antitrust lawsuits. And he thought to himself, man, this is brilliant. Frank Viono, I know the owners don't like it. They'll like it later once it works. All right, go out there, go make the quarterback club, and go divide that players union. Go take away their money, and we'll also turn this league into a quarterback league with the quarterback club. So he gave Viono a blank check book and said, Viono, hit the road and go get all the damn quarterbacks. Viono, brilliant mind as he was, said, all right, I can't get all these quarterbacks, and they don't want to talk to me. I'm some creepy NFL exec. So who do you go after? The agents. The agents. The agents got all the quarterbacks. I get one agent, I get all the quarterbacks. Two agents had most of the quarterbacks. Lee Steinberg, who we all know, Jerry Maguire was a movie that was basically built around the image of Lee Steinberg, and Marvin Dimoff. All right, they had most of the quarterbacks. Seth Steinberg had Warren Moon, Steve Young, Tony Eason, Ken O'Brien, Ray Wilson, Neil Lomax. Dimoff had Dan Marino and John Elway. Those were the big ones. Right, that's your We Are the World theory. You get Michael Jackson, you get Stevie Wonder, you'll get Willie Nelson and Bob Dylan. They'll come on board, I guarantee you. So they got Elway and they got Marino by the end of 1990. Then they signed Warren Moon, Bernie Kosar, Jim Kelly, Troy Aikman, Randall Cunningham, Phil Simms, Jim Everett, Boomer Esiason, Bubby Brister, who they really didn't want, but they got anyway, Jim Harbaugh, Steve Young, no Joe Montana. a guy who had already crossed the picket line before. No Joe Montana. He wanted more money. He thought he was worth more money because he was the biggest star in the league.
And getting back to your point, Rod, MJ. Remember, MJ was never on any of the NBA lives. He had his own licensing agreement.
Exactly.
Right?
Totally and Montana separate. Did too. So yeah. Montana was like, no, I'm too big time for that. I'm not doing it. Even though they were giving these guys anywhere from $20,000 to $100,000 extra dollars. Keep in mind, the average NFL salary back then is $250,000 to $300,000.
That's matching it.
That's all close to matching. And the quarterbacks were making like $1 million. So this is about 10 to 15% raise. Of course the quarterbacks are going to do it. Cream, cash rules, everything around me. Money talks. So they went and signed all these quarterbacks. And once they ended up signing all the quarterbacks, guys, they essentially crippled the Players Association. There was nothing. The Players Association didn't have enough money to fight the NFL and to actually start all these antitrust lawsuits to pay all the lawyers, of course. And the quarterbacks actually loved it. The quarterbacks loved it because they were making a ton more money. And in the end, this is part of what made the NFL Players Association so weak that it's never really recovered. They have put in more kind of fail safes within the CBA so they can guard against being hustled by the NFL owners and execs. But the truth is, I mean, the NFL Players Association is still the weakest of all the Players Association, and part of the reason is because they've been manipulated just like this. But Lee Steinberg said unapologetically about it at the time, football was built with the quarterbacks as the leading man, and it's still that way to this day, gentlemen. They are the leading man, and now those leading men, they want more power. They want to expand the power of the executive branch, if you will, of the NFL, and that's the quarterback position. And the agents, by the way, Mark Rogers, who's a baseball guy, Russell Wilson's agent, and David Mulligetta, who plays hardball, who lives right here in Austin. The agents, just like back then, they're going to be the ones that are going to light the spark. They're going to be the ones that are going to ignite that fire. And no matter if you like it or not, the quarterbacks are going to get more power. They did back then, and they actually screwed over their own teammates and their own Players Association to do it. And they'll do it here, too. That's just the way it is, man. Quarterback is a special position in that regard.
It is. And guys, it's good stuff, Rod. At some point, I'm wondering if the NFL with the Zedid one and done, $8.7 billion they're now going to make per year just with TV deals alone. If they step in and really separate that position, you're going to have to do something with the salary cap considering where that market's going. You're already treating them differently. Just go ahead and create almost like a different salary cap just for them.
I agree. Or make it the exception where
make it the
quarterback
exception.
Doesn't
exactly.
count.
Exactly. Exactly.
Then counting is your salary cap. And you basically give it a max salary like you do NBA players. Say the quarterback has a max salary, but then the salary cap is for everybody else. You could do that. I'm with you, though. I think they'll end up doing something. But the NFL likes this, though, guys, because now they're getting the same treatment in the offseason as the NBA. We always say the NBA's most exciting season is not the actual season itself. It's the offseason, the crazy season. And the NFL owns more of the sports calendar than any other league, right? They own from September all the way through February, and then they got the combine, and then they got the draft. But now they're going to own the silly season, because now when quarterbacks start declaring they want to be traded, or they want this or they want that, what have we been talking about for the last 2 months? Quarterbacks, Dak, Deshaun, Russell. That's what the NFL wants. So I'm not sure the NFL wants to put a kibosh on it. I think they kind of like it.
They're making our job even easier. I love it. Giving us more content in the dog days of summer, giving us all this NFL content. Now, that's great stuff, Rod B. I agree, and I'm fascinated to see, you know, what happens next with these quarterbacks, because it does feel like this is just the start of a potential massive change in the way that position is treated around the league.
Good stuff, man. Really good stuff. You can obviously get more of Rod's rant if you get to hornfm.com. Listen to all of them throughout the week. They were all very good. Couple segments to go here on the Horn. Big game for the Longhorns in Lubbock tomorrow. Luckily, it probably won't be that typical Lubbock atmosphere that the Texas basketball team gets the treatment. But this is still a big one. We'll preview it up next.
Flex ATX with Snoop Daniel has moved to Thursdays. Thursday Night Flex, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors, brings you interviews, stats, recruiting, and more from Central Texas area high school coaches and athletes. Plus, check out video clips, mixtapes, and replays at FLXATX.com. Thursday Night Flex with Snoop Daniel, presented by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Thursdays from 8 to 10 on The Horn, live, local, and digital.
Hey, what's up, folks? Lifetime Longhorn Rider Babers. I actually, this is the 100% truth. I was just getting ready to call Vaquero's Cafe and Cantina. I swear to you, just getting ready to call, look down at the text and saw, oh, actually, I have to do my Vaquero spot. So it's perfect. I get my Tex-Mex fix on a Friday. I suggest you do the same. I love Vaquero's. Every time I call now, they pretty much know what I want. As soon as I tell them, oh, it's Rob, they say, oh, you want the fajitas? I get the Hall of Fame fajitas every time. I also get the shrimp brochette, the bacon-wrapped shrimp. I get the queso, and I get a couple of those frozen marks to go. Now, you ain't got to follow my lead, even though those are probably some of my favorite items. They have revamped the menu. They have expanded the menu. Go to vaquerocafe.com to find out those new items they have there. Once you figure out what you want, you can go in and dine in at Vaquero's, and you can feel perfectly safe when you do that. They've always maintained the strictest sanitary standards of hygiene and cleanliness, and now all the employees at Vaquero's are going out of their way to make the best Tex-Mex in the ATX, also the safest Tex-Mex in the ATX. But if you're like me, you just want to get it and you want to go, you can always call it in, 512-382-7899. That's 512-382-7899. And once you place your order, or you can make a reservation, my friends at Vaquero's will hook you up. There's a reason that Austin is known as the Tex-Mex capital of Texas. And if you want the best of the best when it comes to Tex-Mex in the ATX, you got to visit Vaquero's Cafe and Cantina. And then you'll figure out pretty quickly why I like to call it the best Tex-Mex in the ATX.
Now, getting caught meant getting fired, but I figured I'd have it all by the time I retired. I'd have me a car worth at least $100,000.
Now, this one's a classic.
I'd get it one.
Rest in peace, Johnny Cash. And happy birthday. Hey, Rod. Whoa. I want to make sure that number doesn't go out on the air. Rod was, I think, still doing his Vaquero's order. He does not lie whenever he's saying that. I mean, every Friday night, it is Vaquero's for our man, Rod Babers. BK, did you hear that?
I did. That's pretty hilarious.
I don't think we got all of it in there. We do know he's a Houston guy, though, born and bred. Texas heading west to take on Texas Tech in Lubbock tomorrow morning, 11 a.m. will be the tip, 10:30 pregame right here on the Horn. So make sure you listen to that. And BK, you were talking about it earlier whenever we previewed this game. You know, Tech came in here to Austin and won 79-77. Mac McClung, a.k.a. Eminem, who isn't shy to shoot. He is a chucka, and he put one up and ends up hitting a three. That was the difference. But you expect this game to be very defensive-oriented. McClung kind of is their offense. Hopefully Texas can get something going with half-court offense. But also a kind of a dogfight. You hope to see more Royce Hamm and Brock Cunningham than the 22 minutes they combined in the first outing.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if the score of tomorrow's game got anywhere close to the score of the first matchup between these two teams back in January. 79-77 was the final score of that one at the Flan, as you mentioned. But both teams were playing much better basketball, especially on the offensive end, the first time these two teams played. And that loss for Texas kind of started the demise of this program. I mean, going into that game, Texas was 10-1. They had crept up to number 4 in the country, their highest ranking in a decade. And since that loss to Texas Tech, they've dropped 4 of 8. They've been a 500 team since they lost that game to Texas Tech in Austin a couple of weeks ago. So hopefully they can get some revenge tomorrow in Lubbock, but I do think this will be more of a slugfest, a defensive struggle type of game. And yeah, I expect Brock Cunningham and Royce Hamm to play big roles tomorrow. I hope they are a part of the rotation. I mean, Cunningham's been getting close to 20 minutes per game, and it feels like his role has increased over the last couple of weeks. So I think tomorrow's going to be a big game for him. And KD, I expect this one to go down to the wire. I really do.
Yeah, especially
Brock Cunningham and Royce Hamm are guys who, you know, are willing to go the extra mile to make those winning type of plays. They're diving for loose balls. They're working hard for rebounds. They're playing great defense. You need as much of that as you can against a Chris Beard coach team. And I think those guys are going to play an important role in tomorrow's contest.
Yeah, Beard's teams usually bring that, and we know that. And they are scrappy, and they are good defensively. We'll just see how much offense Texas can get against that. Rod, you know, we look at the Texas backcourt, and obviously Andrew Jones, Courtney Ramey, and Matt Coleman, and how important they are. I really want to see Jericho Sims and Kai Jones do as much as they can as the bigger pogo sticks that they are tomorrow.
Yeah. Hey, my bad. This studio, I got to interrupt real quick. It says I pressed the off button. You guys can still hear me.
We can hear you right now, yeah.
No, I'm talking like when I pressed off. Like
No, you're all good, brother. You're good.
The mic was supposed to be off.
Yeah, we are in every different spot.
And you guys could hear me, so I apologize. I'm glad I haven't said anything racist or say anything crazy to myself.
The good thing,
you guys can
hear
me.
I heard you giving out your phone number and your social security number, so I wrote that down.
We need to cut off the phone number.
Bro, you guys realize if that has been the case the entire week, I could have gotten myself in so much trouble just spouting Tupac lyrics to myself. Like, who knows what I could have said on the air just talking to myself. And it's such a blessing that I didn't do it because I had the mic off and you guys could hear me obviously loud as day.
Yeah, well, the only thing we heard was starting to give your phone number, and that's when
I
jumped
heard you,
in.
And that's when I ran away from the mic because I was right by it, and I thought the mic was off. And apparently, there is no off switch in here, so I'm glad I know that now before I've said something that I truly might have regretted.
I heard you saying it whenever you're doing the Vaquero's advertisement. I wouldn't worry about you. I'd worry about BK and me a lot more.
Situation. That could have went all types of wrong.
We would be gone if that had been the case all week.
So my bad. Sorry, I just wanted to apologize.
Now you're all good, but you don't lie with that. You go to Vaquero's every Friday and you're giving him your number.
I call it in. I usually call it in during the show so I can pick it up on the way home. So my bad there. You go behind the scenes. But yeah, I mean, for this Texas team, I agree with BK. You know, there's some things you can count on with this Texas team and some things I just don't really believe. I don't believe that they're going to hit 24 of their 31 free throws, or if they even get to 31 free throws. The beauty of getting to those 31 free throws when they did versus West Virginia is they were really aggressive. It was almost a reward for them being aggressive. And they had no choice because their offense was going stale. It had gone cold. So they were manufacturing points. So they got to the free throw line a ton, got a lot of fast break points. They actually had, 16 fast break points in that game. So they were grinding. A lot of junkyard points, if you will, right, by some of their guys just having to spark and generate forms of offense. So hopefully, Coleman, Ramey, hopefully those guys step up and have, big offensive games. But we know Tech is a hell of a good defensive team. That's why BK's talking about we probably should expect a slobber knocker here. It's probably going to be an ugly game. Can Texas win one of them ugly games? And hopefully it comes down to clutch time. And in clutch time, who are you going to count on?
I walk into a lot of Texas games and college basketball games expecting an ugly game. So I just want a W. I don't care how they do it. And they're going to have they shot well. BK, they shot 52% from beyond the arc. Now, we mentioned 58% from the line. Hopefully some of the Kansas line stuff that was good can translate to Lubbock, because I think you're dead on. I mean, this just feels like it's going to be a one possession game.
Yeah, I don't want to be box score radio guy, but ironically enough, Texas shot the same number of free throws in the game against Texas Tech as they did in this week's game against Kansas. The difference against the Red Raiders, Texas was 18 of 31 at the line. They lost that game by two. And against Kansas, Texas was 24 of 31 from the line, and they won that game by three in overtime. So free throws will matter. They always matter in close games. I expect tomorrow to be a close game. I think KenPom has this as a 70-68 loss for Texas. So he thinks this is going to be a close game. I expect the Vegas line to be within a couple of points as well. So free throws will be very, very important. And look, hopefully Texas can just take the momentum from the game against Kansas, right? That felt like a season-saving type of win. But if they go down the stretch, these final four games of the regular season, and they don't build off what they did against the Jayhawks, then that win's going to kind of all feel for naught. So hopefully they can find a way to beat Texas Tech. Tech has been struggling as of late. They are now sub-500 in the Big 12. This is a beatable team. I think Texas is getting them at the right time. The question is, did Texas take a step on Tuesday, or did they just find a way and kind of get lucky to beat Kansas? Hopefully Texas is trending towards the team that they were earlier in the year.
Yeah, that was your best take you've had in 2 weeks. Maybe you should do more of that more often. All right, we're 3 hours in. We got about 15 to go. This is a triple option on the horn. Abbreviated hour number four here on the horn. It is a triple option with RBKD, Kevin Dunn, Brad Kellner, Rod Babers. John Reichel has been producing. About 8 minutes left before we get you to Texas and BYU. Little pregame and then a 6:30 first pitch for the Horns and the Cougars. Texas trying to get back to or trying to get to 500 as they've beaten BYU the first two games after the rough weekend last week. I guess we can kind of do our what's on tap. If y'all really want to preview that game, we can preview that. But anything on tap for you, Rod, this week, weekend?
Oh, yeah, actually, I'm going to watch some good trash TV, man. I haven't caught up with my trash TV in a while. I've been watching documentaries and movies. So I'm going to watch some 90 Day Fiancé.
Oh, man.
Yeah, going to catch up on some Naked and Afraid. Okay. And I'm also going to watch that Temptation Island, like two episodes in. Going to watch that. So I'm going to be all trash TV this weekend. Man. It's going to feel good. It's going to make me feel better about myself.
Yeah, you know what I mean? That should do it right there. And it's funny how you never mess up 90 Day Fiancé when you're talking about the show.
Well done. Well done.
Just saying. BK, what? So you've been in Galveston, in Houston. Where are you going to be tomorrow?
That's a good question, man. Uh-oh. That is a good question. Uh-oh. I might take a trip down to McAllen, go to the Valley to wrap up this weekend.
You're kidding.
Who knows? I'm becoming Carmen Sandiego, so you got to figure out where I'm going to be. But I'll tell you what, guys, I've said a number of times that I plan on dying alone. After hearing the television that Rod is going to watch this weekend, I feel pretty good about that stance.
Dude, that's my take on this is stuff to that, die alone. This is stuff that I want to watch. This is stuff she's making me watch.
Really?
She'll make me watch Real Housewives of Atlanta or some Housewives show. Below Deck. Those are her type shows. Dude, Temptation Island, that's legit good trash. That's good trash TV right now.
What is 90 Day Fiancé like?
They have, basically, they marry some person from another country, or they get engaged.
Okay.
And they have 90 days. I think that's like, in America, you have 90 days to get married when you come over with a visa.
Oh.
And then you can become a citizen. So they got 90 days to get married. And a lot of time, it's a disaster. I mean, it's just...
No, you don't say.
Yeah, it's just a dumpster fire, but it's fun to watch.
It sounds like true love. I mean, it doesn't sound like you're just trying to get citizenship.
Exactly.
I'll definitely watch Tech in Texas tomorrow, but I need to get away, and this will be a weekend. I'm going to try and not think at all.
Trash TV.
And I think that's where I'm going.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not going that trashy, but BK, I'm going to hit some trash TV this weekend. I'm going to try and do as much of nothing as possible.
What's on the TiVo? What does trash TV entail for you?
Oh, man. It does entail some Below Deck, and I got to get back to my $1 million listings.
Ooh, my girl loves that show.
It's so good. New York and L.A., and I think I've seen most of them, but I haven't watched it in months, and I think I'm going to go. What do y'all call that? Binging. I think I'm going to binge.
What do you young people call
it?
Well, yeah. Binging.
Yeah, binging. Well, no, this is the only country where we use that word positively.
That's great.
Oh, man. I mean, I know I'm the only guy who's had a bar mitzvah on this show. I didn't realize I was the only man on this show.
You should have realized that months ago, man.
Oh, man. What about you, John? I'm curious. What are you getting into this weekend, JR?
Oh, man. Absolutely nothing. I'm doing less than trash TV. I'm just going to sit and do nothing.
Good.
I'm just excited, man. Get some sleep. I might turn on HBO Max and see what documentary series I want to crack into, but that's the extent of what I'm going to be doing.
Yeah. Watch Lady in the Dale. Watch Lady in the Dale.
Did you watch that, Rod?
John, it's good, man. It's good, yeah.
Because that was one of them this week. That there was a couple HBO Max things that you said that we definitely got to check out, right?
Yeah.
What about the Black Panther guy?
Judas and the Black Messiah. Watched it last night. It is fantastic.
Okay.
Oh, man. Definitely worth everybody's time. Judas and the Black Messiah.
That's definitely one that's going to be on my list, and one for all of you. Watch McMillions if you haven't already.
Oh, yes!
Watch
Good job, John.
McMillions, yes.
Yeah, it came out like last year, but it's still...
Oh, no, it's a banger. Have you, great. Kevin?
Is that the McDonald's the little lottery that got
Monopoly
rigged? Monopoly that got rigged?
Yeah, rigged from the start all the way through 2002 for like 20 years. The Mafia had its hand in it, and it's well worth
it's
it.
Crazy. It's really good. It's really good.
All right, I'll
actually,
make it to, go
I actually
ahead,
did
BK.
Watch the first episode of that, John.
What'd you think?
It's very good. It's very good, but apparently not good enough.
Exactly.
For me to watch the last
well, how many
episodes?
Mm-hmm.
I thought BK said
it was
very
five.
Good, but he didn't watch the rest of it.
hard to please, man. I got commitment issues, all right? You got to be very impressive. Very impressive for me to watch an episode two.
That's,
if I'm not like completely hooked by episode one, I'm out.
That reflects your dating life. That reflects your dating life.
Yep.
It does.
It does.
No matter how hot she is, she can't get a second date.
Right. And also, I think it reflects, and probably because I'm the same way, just how comfortable we are with ourselves, Rod, and being by ourselves and enjoying our own time. You know, I frustrate a lot of my friends, too, with that, because they'll say, hey, did you watch that movie? I'm like, yeah, I saw it. And, you know, or a show. And, yeah, I saw it. And You going to watch it again? No. you know, but I liked it. But I'll say I like it, too. And it's like, well, how much do you have to like something for you to rewatch it? A lot. That's the answer. And I think BK is following that. All right. Wow. We're going to come back on Monday. Hopefully Texas has a win against Texas Tech. And hopefully Texas has a winning record in baseball. They're 2-3 right now. Get to 4-3. I expect to see more small ball tonight. I expect to see it tomorrow. Until this offense really gets their rhythm and timing going, I think that's the way to go. They've got a ton of speed. They look like pretty good bunters. And against BYU, with their defense and the five errors they had yesterday, BK, I know a lot of people don't like it. And frankly, they don't know college baseball, the ones that don't like it. They don't know really how it works. And you got to play some small ball. I'm glad David Pierce was able to do that.
You go, Al Davis, just win, baby.
Just win, baby. Just.
And I think small ball is going to be a part of that game plan tonight.
All right, BK, you be safe getting back, and we will have you in on Monday. It'll be good to see you. And Rod, you enjoy your Vaqueros and your trash TV and your fiance. John, heck of a job this week, man. We really appreciate you stepping in, and you enjoy your weekend with that sleep, okay?
Will do, man. Will do.
Don't forget, Texas Tech tomorrow, 11 a.m., 10:30 pregame, or 10:30 pregame. Right here on the Horn. And then we've got baseball coming up next. We've got Texas and BYU, 6:30 first pitch. That's going to do it for us. Don't forget, get to hornfm.com if you want to podcast everything, and always get the Horn app. Y'all have a great weekend. Peace.